If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Dear Stephen Colbert, my name is Jay, and what you're listening to is an episode of a podcast that I produce called The Best of the Left Podcast. I've created this episode as a tribute and a thank you to you for your performance at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I would like to warn you ahead of time, although I hate to be the first to tell you, that the general consensus is that you're a failure as a comedian. There is an upside, however, and I would like to submit that should you play your cards right and the president catch wind of your utter failure, you may just end up with a Presidential Medal of Freedom. The following is a selection of highlights, lowlights, and analysis brought to you by the entire spectrum of the insidious left-wing media. And now, welcome to the Best of the Left podcast, with clips today from Rachel Maddow, Slate Magazine, Al Franken, The Young Turks, Counterspin, The Majority Report, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and On the Media.
Every Monday, we are lucky enough to get an update from our friend David Bender on some of the best weekend political chatter out of Washington, all the good juicy stuff we sometimes miss while we're enjoying our few days' rest from the busy work week. David Bender is host of Air America's Politically Direct, and he joins us this morning courtesy of the good folks at People for the American Way. David Bender, oh, please tell me that you got to go to the White House Correspondents' Dinner this weekend.
Did you go, Rachel?
I had the stomach flu.
Well, then, yes, I was there. I was there. God, I was looking forward to you being there. I'm so sorry you weren't feeling well.
David, but, you're lying.
I'm the president of that organization, in fact. I did all of the entertainment myself. That was me. And if you don't believe that, you probably have been also not seeing in the media, because this is really it was an amazing event. And I, truth in broadcasting here, I saw it on C-SPAN.
Yeah.
But what I saw on C-SPAN was something that you actually never see. These events, Rachel, have been going on for 92 years.
Wow.
This organization's been around. And they have this sort of very inside the beltway tradition where the president comes out and he pokes fun at himself. And everyone laughs along, and for just one night, no partisanship, and the media and the press and the president all get along. They're best of friends. And frankly, it's nauseating. It's really, really a disgusting event, particularly when it's glossing over the fact that this press corps has been completely silent for most of this administration on the very issues they're now joking about.
Yeah.
So somebody had the brilliant idea, and actually it's the incoming president, Steve Scully, of C-SPAN, to invite Stephen Colbert to be the entertainer this year. So the way it played out, and the media has been stunningly silent on this because they got skewered too. And anyone who doesn't know, Stephen Colbert does the Colbert Report on the television machine, five nights a week on Comedy Central, and he does a character which is essentially Bill O'Reilly. And he sends up the pontificators, and he sends up the media, much in the same way the Daily Show does. But he did it in front of 2,700 White House press corps and friends of the administration, Karl Rove in the audience. And he sent up everyone, but it didn't pull any punches. And this was a very uncomfortable evening for the White House press corps and for the president.
You think it was significantly more pointed and more embarrassing than these things usually are?
Never seen one like this.
Wow.
Never seen one like this. Most of the discomfiture is, traditionally, it's about whether someone has gone over the top in terms of were they a little bawdy or raunchy. This had nothing to do with that.
That was like a couple of years ago when Bush was like crawling around looking for the weapons of mass destruction, right? And that was just offensive because he's so incredibly insensitive and offensive.
Yes, but do you remember what happened? The press laughed at that, which was the most offensive part.
That's right. You're
exactly
People
in the room looked at this film that Bush brought of him crawling around the Oval Office floor while people were dying, and they thought somehow that was funny. And this is what I was cringing at watching C-SPAN, thinking, we're going to have this again. Exact opposite. And the blogosphere is going crazy trying to get people and their links to all this to see what actually happened, because this was the first time in my memory that anyone has actually sat 10 feet away from George Bush and told him the truth. And did it on national television. I think we have a couple of clips. There's one of Colbert's lines had to do with Bush's low poll numbers.
All right, this was we got this one. Cut number three, Chris. Let's hear it.
Now I know there's some polls out there saying that this man has a 32% approval rating, but guys like us, we don't pay attention to the polls. We know that polls are just a collection of statistics that reflect what people are thinking in reality. And reality has a well-known liberal bias.
You know, that was going to be the subtitle of my book if I ever wrote one. It was going to be The Facts Have a Liberal Bias. I guess I can't use that now.
No, sure you can. And you can get Stephen Colbert to write a
blurb about how I stole it. No, I had it first.
it works better now. Colbert said something about Bush sticking to his principles. He said that when the president decides something on Monday, and remember, he's the decider, he still believes it on Wednesday, no matter what happened on Tuesday.
Ah.
I mean, these were the kinds of things, and Bush tried. He had that frozen smile that, you know, you've seen in uncomfortable moments, usually of his own making. But this time, with Laura also there, this was not a happy moment. They rushed out of that room when it was over. They were not pleased.
I heard the way I read it described in some of the mainstream newspaper reporting was that they gave kind of a grim nod to Stephen Colbert when it was over, that there was no like, oh, you really got me there, good buddy, kind of thing. Like
none of that. No, you know, Colbert says that the president said good job and tapped him on the arm, but, you know, I think he was probing for weak spots. It was not a pleasant moment. There was another great line. Actually, one of my favorite line of the night was a clip about that we have about the White House shakeup.
Oh yeah, here we go.
Everybody asked for personnel changes, so the White House has personnel changes, and then you write, "Oh, they're just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic." First of all, that is a terrible metaphor. This administration is not sinking. This administration is soaring. If anything, they are rearranging the deck chairs on the Hindenburg.
Wow. That is really...
I love a good metaphor joke. I mean, you don't get that often, and that's perfect. I mean, I have dragged that poor Titanic out of the water more times than I care to mention, and someone's finally got it right. It really is going down in flames.
You know, Stephen Colbert opened up his speech by saying, "I feel like I'm what an honor, White House Correspondents' Dinner, to sit here at the same table with my hero, George W. Bush. I feel like I'm dreaming. Somebody pinch me." You know what? I'm a pretty sound sleeper. That may not be enough. Somebody shoot me in the face. Is he really not here tonight? Oh, that's the one guy who maybe could have helped.
It went from there, and he never, Rachel, broke character. See, this is what was interesting, because usually they'll banter back and forth, and they'll, you know, if there's an awkward moment, and you got to believe it was not. You could pan the room and see people looking, nudging each other, going, "Is he doing this? Is this really what's going on here?" What I think is stunning. Let me cut to the chase here. What's stunning is that we haven't heard more about this. The blogosphere is really all over this, and it may push it out there. People should be talking about this, because this is one of those moments that I think the press corps doesn't know how to report on itself. And, you know, the New York Times had a whole piece on the other little comic routine that Bush did with a Bush impersonator, which, you know, I think that's an oxymoron. But the truth is, this is what people should be talking about, and hopefully more of these clips are now circulating, and they will. There's a website, thankyoustephencolbert.org.
Oh, nice. Very
good. Thank you, Stephen Colbert, and people should go there and just after they've seen this, the clips are on that website.
Excellent.
And then send them a little message.
Thankyoustephencolbert.com. That's, you know, we...
.org.
.org. There we go. The clips that we got were from crooksandliars.com, which is a website that we use a lot here on
Love
the show because
they
archive so much great stuff. And C-SPAN obviously carried it live and had the clip up on their website. There's a question as to whether or not they're going to continue to make it available and how long it's going to be up there and accessible. That'll be interesting to watch as well. But as long as this stuff is circulating in the blogosphere, it'll be accessible, and I think it will catch some more attention. There's no way to get no way to guarantee more hits on the web than by being legitimately laugh out loud funny.
And it is that, and I hope everyone takes a look at it. Now, Rachel, I've nominated you to do this job next year. Are you up for it?
I plan on having the stomach flu again, actually. But thank you, David. Appreciate
that. Chronic stomach flu.
Yeah, exactly. Comes around every year for the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
The Colbert Revolt. This is the daily podcast from Slate.com for Wednesday, May 3rd. I'm Andy Bowers. By now, you've probably heard about comedian Stephen Colbert's routine at the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday. The conventional wisdom seems to be coalescing around the notion that Colbert went too far, throwing sharp, ironic barbs right at the unsmiling president seated a few feet away. Well, here's why Slate's TV critic thinks the conventional wisdom is wrong. The piece is called Dinner Theater, Why Stephen Colbert Didn't Bomb in D.C. It's written by Troy Patterson. So I'm sitting there watching the online video of Stephen Colbert's performance at Saturday night's White House Correspondents Association dinner. Colbert looked excellent in his tux, and he was doing his usual shtick, playing a know-it-all, know-nothing of the Bill O'Reilly school with the usual aplomb. And just as Colbert is making his segue into a pre-taped skit documenting his audition for Tony Snow's new job, which he introduced this way.
I was vying for the job myself. I think I would have made a fabulous press secretary. I have nothing but contempt for these people.
There's an audience shot capturing the face of my ex-girlfriend. She's a D.C. lawyer who loves the silliness of Monty Python, who used to read The Nation in the bath, and who I think named her new dog after Howard Dean. In other words, she ought to have been cracking up at Colbert's absurdist satire and meaningful snark. Instead, as the comedian aimed vicious blows at the president, I mostly read nervous concern in her eyes. The air in that room must have had a weird and very rare charge. The night's best reaction shots confirmed this. Here's a jiggling Justice Scalia giggling like a schoolgirl. Here's a military man not quite disciplined enough to stifle his grin at a crack, decent but not first rate, on the Secretary of Defense.
See who we got here tonight. We got General Mosley, Air Force Chief of Staff. We've got General Peter Pace, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They still support Rumsfeld. Right, you guys aren't retired yet, right?
In the immediate wake of Colbert's most brutal line,
I stand by this man because he stands for things. Not only for things, he stands on things. Things like aircraft carriers and rubble and recently flooded city squares.
The President of the United States wore on his peeved lips an expression that you usually see only in the instant before a bar fight. But half a minute later, when the topic turned to the first marriage,
obviously loves his wife. Calls her his better half, and polls show America agrees.
The president had regained his composure and was the picture of jolliness. Not so the trio of Washington wives the camera next cut to. Their faces showed varying degrees of disgust, and it looked like all three of them were trying to hide under their shawls. Who did they think they were getting? Mark Russell? Actually, they may not have known who they were getting. The MC was clueless enough when introducing the headliner to pronounce the final T in the Colbert Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, here with a special edition of the Colbert Report, Stephen Colbert.
Square. You hire a good political satirist, you get good political satire, which is necessarily dangerous. So when the Washington Post's reliable source column speaks of the quote-unquote consensus that the routine fell flat, and New York Daily News gossip and reliable source alumnus Lloyd Grove writes that Colbert bombed badly, they are offering meaningless reportage. Pop Dadaist that he is, Colbert wasn't bombing so much as freaking his audience out for his own enjoyment. Colbert deserves to be judged on his own terms. He shouldn't have stolen one good joke from his own show.
That's because you looked it up in a book. Next time, look it up in your gut.
And another from Jon Stewart's Oscar intro.
McClellan, of course, eager to retire, really, really felt like he needed to spend more time with Andrew Card's children.
The audition tape segment was at least 90 seconds too long, although the Colbert rapport with Helen Thomas was good enough that the two ought to be considering a sitcom. In general, though, he was brilliant, perfectly daffy and gutsy, as in the line that earned what seemed to be the crowd's biggest laugh. Colbert spoke of interviewing Jesse Jackson.
I had him on the show. It was a very interesting interview, a very challenging interview. You can ask him anything, but he's going to say what he wants at the pace that he wants. It's like boxing a glacier. Enjoy that metaphor, by the way, because your grandchildren will have no idea what a glacier is.
That was Dinner Theater, Why Stephen Colbert Didn't Bomb in D.C., written by Troy Patterson.
Tell me if there's something I can do. Lately all I'm thinking of is you. So I tried to write you a love song, but all the music came out wrong. So I hope that you dance along. I hope that you
There was a lot of coverage of the president did this routine with this guy, Steve Bridges, who does an impression of the president that's uncanny. I mean, he really is great. And he does it for Leno. And he did it there, and it was very funny in performance, but kind of, let's play a little thing. But this got incredible amount of play. And the president being self-deprecating with, so let's play this one little thing from it. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm absolutely delighted to be here. As is Laura.
She's hot.
Muy caliente.
Okay, so big laughs.
Two things on that.
What?
One, I read in the New York Times that was an ad-lib by the president at their rehearsal beforehand added that line.
Muy caliente?
Yeah.
That the president did?
President did.
Because it was the other guy's line, obviously.
Yeah, right. The president
added
it.
Okay. Also, as I've said about the president, he values humor. He's the third funniest guy in a fraternity. That's my take on the president.
That was maybe the least funny joke I've ever heard.
Well, here's the thing. It's just, she's hot. Okay, so basically what I'm saying is that room of 2,600 people, they just love cornball humor.
Yeah.
Okay, now, Stephen Colbert comes on, and he does one hilarious joke after another. But the tonnage of it, it was, now this is where Billy and I kind of disagree. I thought it was balls out scathing of the president in its cumulative. And that's why the room didn't like it. What say you, Billy?
Well, I'm getting a lot of, I'm on the receiving end or the rude end of a lot of liberal grapevines, and I'm getting sensing a lot of glee about somebody sort of standing up and sticking it to the man, and
right.
The idea that Bush was shamed publicly by Stephen Colbert, who spoke truth to power, that kind of stuff. And it reminded me outside your appearance in Brattleboro, Vermont, there was like one of those guys used to be those New Yorker cartoons where they'd walk down the street with a sign that said "The end is near," in the long hair and trousers held up with a rope, and he had a sign which said "Satire replaces outrage in decadent society." And it did make me start to think that if the level of excitement about Stephen Colbert is kind of a thin reed for people who oppose the president. I don't think the president, could care less what Stephen Colbert thinks of him. That's the sort of thing we say all, every day on the show. And I think he was whistling when he untied his bow tie that night.
Well, I agree.
First of all, I don't think he untied his own bow tie.
Well, no, now here's the thing. These are all separate issues. These are all separate issues. And this ultimately is not important at all. But I've done the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and so I have a little, you know, I'm interested in this, and I'm also a comedian, I'm a senator, and I admire Colbert. And what happened, and those 2,600 people in the room are, it's just an interesting phenomenon to me, and I'm not saying it's important. First of all, what he did was, I thought was terrific. I thought it was hilarious. I'm going to just play a couple jokes from him. But I guess part of the point that Brock's going to make is that the president's thing got all kinds of coverage. I saw it on Stephanopoulos. They played it all over the place. And no one played Colbert, who, you know, was really funny and didn't go over as well with these 2,600 people because these 2,600 people have a collective stick up their butt.
Well, but you should explain who the 2,600 people are. I mean, this is the White House Correspondents Association. So these are people from newspapers. I mean, these are the press. These aren't administration toadies.
A lot of them are, though. I'll tell you why. Because they invite their sources, who are administration toadies, a lot of their sources, and also administration people come. And people in Congress come. So there's.
But as Colbert himself pointed out in his routine, Joe Wilson was there. I mean, these were, you know, it's not a uniformly supportive.
Yes, I understand. Let's just play a couple of Colbert jokes. Let's play government's least.
I believe the government that governs best is the government that governs least. And by these standards, we have set up a fabulous government in Iraq.
Okay, well, I got a good response. That was another thing is that everyone says he died, and he didn't. But he started to, at the end, people started to resent the tonnage, sheer tonnage. That was fairly early in the speech. But that's a great joke.
But I think people also said on the other side that, you know, Bush seemed ill at ease during Colbert's speech and seemed to be sort of suffering by being confronted with the truth. And the truth is, I didn't see the clip of Colbert's speech, but I saw Bush during his own routine. I thought he seemed ill at ease during that. that's just his affect. You know?
It's terrible material.
You know, I haven't seen Colbert's thing. I haven't seen a tape of it.
But I read it. I mean, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
Stephen Colbert is very funny, and I thought his thing was perfect. I just wouldn't overdo the level of
I'm not trying to overdo the conspiracy theory of it being squashed by the media, but it's sort of like, you know, there was a lot the next day, like on Fox, like, he died.
We got a
clip. He was terrible. He just wasn't funny. We got a clip of what?
Steve Doocy saying such.
Let's play that.
It was very uncomfortable. Personally, I felt like he went over the line. Remember, today, in Lloyd Grove's column, he says that Stephen Colbert bombed badly. It was not very funny.
It was really funny. Okay, let's play the next one I got.
The greatest thing about this man is he's steady. You know where he stands. He believes the same thing Wednesday that he believed on Monday. No matter what happened Tuesday.
That's a good line.
He's just brilliant. And of course, the idea of Steve Doocy. I mean, Steve Doocy, I'm sure, this is a Fox. What's the name of that show?
Fox and Friends.
Fox and Friends. Okay. And by the way, the merger. Who said John Stewart said the merger has been complete?
With Tony Snow?
Yeah.
No.
He loves the she's hot. Muy caliente. That's funny to Steve Doocy.
I don't think that counts as a joke.
Oh, I know it does. It got a huge laugh.
If it gets a laugh,
it's a joke.
Yeesh.
And that's what kills me is that the comedy style. He wasn't funny. He said right.
Right.
The comedy styles of Steve Doocy, ladies and gentlemen. he had a show. He had a talk show. Steve Doocy, remember that?
Yeah.
When was that? Like about 15 years ago? It was like a midday talk show, just like Letterman had a midday talk show. If Steve Doocy were funny, he would be on a different show than Fox and Friends. Saying Stephen Colbert isn't, it was hilarious. The joke about play the gut. It's a long thing, but I just want to play it. I think he's hilarious.
My name is Stephen Colbert. And tonight,
it is my privilege to celebrate this president. Because we're not so different, he and I. We both get it. Guys like us, we're not some brainiacs on the nerd patrol. We're not members of the Factinista. We go straight from the gut. Right, sir? That's where the truth lies. Right down here in the gut. Do you know you have more nerve endings in your gut than you have in your head? You can look it up. Now I know some of you are going to say I did look it up, and that's not true. That's because you looked it up in a book. Next time, look it up in your gut. I did. My gut tells me that's how our nervous system works.
I'm sorry, I've never... Ducey tops that all the time. Yeah. Tune in Fox and Friends. Hilarious. Hilarious show.
Your love's lifting me higher than I've ever been lifted before. So keep it up, quench my desire.
Let's move on to the second clip here, John. I love this one, too, and it's perfectly fitting with our egregious clip theme that we have with you. Lou Dobbs is talking about the Stephen Colbert performance at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and his comments on it and the comments of the male conservative talk show host, Stephanie Miller, they're fine, and of course the male conservative talk show host is a clown, but I loved Martha Zoller at radio talk shows I haven't heard of, but I'm sure she hasn't heard of me either, but that's not the problem. The problem is what she says. So we've edited that clip as well. We're going to show you Colbert's piece there, and then go to Zoller's comments on it, and then we'll talk about it with John in a second.
The greatest thing about this man is he's steady. You know where he stands. He believes the same thing Wednesday that he believed on Monday, no matter what happened Tuesday. Events can change. This man's beliefs never will.
Do you think it's a reflection that the liberals still has the media has a liberal bias, Martha, that Colbert was not more heavily criticized, than Imus years ago with Bill Clinton?
Well, certainly there is a liberal bias, and he is picking on George Bush, who the media doesn't like, versus Imus, who was picking on Clinton, who the media loved, okay? And so that you really see a little bit of a bias. What came to mind after seeing Flight 90, United 93 this weekend, is 9/11 was a Tuesday. So that was he probably didn't even think about that, but for me, having lost friends in the World Trade Towers, that was the first thing I thought of.
So I want to understand this correctly. We can never make a joke that involves Tuesday again.
Tuesday's now off limits. Limit. We yeah. are not allowed. So, I mean, just think of that.
Disappointing clip. News, John, for Mitch Albom, who will now have to change the name of his book to Thursdays with Maury.
My God. I mean, it's just insane where they find, but some talk shows and right-wing, but they find every instance possible where they can throw in 9/11 as if they're these patriotic people. And it's really, again, I've never used the word despicable. I can't imagine in my whole life until I started blogging
right.
and seeing what people like her actually say, and it's so off the wall. I mean, it caught me. Did I just hear that right?
First thing I thought was 9/11 happened on a Tuesday. Are you freaking kidding me? That was the first thing you thought?
You know what? After we ran the whole clip, or the first time I watched it on crooksandliars.com, it took me a while. I actually had to, for 5 seconds, I was like, what is she talking about? What does that mean? Oh, I'm like, come on.
Also,
you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, it's great.
By the way, from now on, this show will be taking Tuesdays off.
There was actually another blogger who had emailed me about this, about the spot, and because Stephanie Miller was on, who's very good, and was actually, I started watching it, and then I just caught you. Of course, it's at the very end where no one really has a chance to tell her how you know, bad shit crazy she is.
Yeah, it's right. That's true. Which is a pity. There are a couple other observations I had, just a little throw. Don Imus and Stephen Colbert had very different performances. Stephen Colbert's, and he maybe didn't, his thing reads better than it sounded, as he didn't break, maybe because he talked too fast. He didn't give enough time for the jokes to settle. That might be. Imus didn't get one laugh the entire time, and I love Don Imus, but Imus went over worse than anyone ever has gone over. You could argue that Colbert didn't go over great in person, although it reads brilliantly. Then, also what I love is the media loved Bill Clinton. That just throwaway line, like, what planet was she on from 1994 to 2001?
See, that's where you got to give Stephanie credit. In the whole clip, and you can see the whole clip on crooksandliars.com, at the end, Stephanie goes, are you telling me that the press didn't make fun of Bill Clinton?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. The alternate reality that people, like, what's her name, Martha Zeller?
Zoller.
That Martha Zoller lives in is stunning. It's remarkable. It
John,
seems like,
you know, yeah, like Don Imus' show, that, you know, I found some articles where people were so offended. I think it was even Cokie Roberts who said that, like, you know, nobody will ever go on his show again. It was so offensive because you're just making sexually, explicit jokes. And, supposedly, from another article, Imus was, like, sweating because people were not, they were horrified. And with Colbert, since his routine was really pointedly at, A, the president, and, B, the press corps.
Exactly.
He was attacking them, so he wasn't getting the laughs that he normally would get.
See, John, that's the great irony of this. Did they talk about the liberal media bias? No, the press didn't laugh and hated what Colbert did because Colbert made fun of the press.
His show, he's brilliant. He's taken on that persona perfectly, and he's just brilliant when he interviews people. That's where the real fun is. And I don't know, did you see the Bill Kristol clip I had up?
Did we
talk about that last week?
Yeah, we did. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he's quickly becoming just one of the best. And you know, what's very interesting, too, is Drudge threw up an article saying he only gets a million, this is how he could slam it. He only gets a million viewers a night. That's damn good for Comedy Central.
It's great for Comedy Central, and for a show that just started, it's actually extremely good, and it's also an incredibly desirable demographic, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 10 times more than Tucker Carlson gets.
Well, that's for damn sure.
Finally, Stephen Colbert of Comedy Central's satiric Colbert Report certainly shook things up at the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner on April 29th. In his trademark right-wing Bill O'Reilly-like persona, Colbert skewered George Bush and the press, ironically congratulating journalists for covering for Bush on tax cuts, WMD, and global warming, and alternately chiding them for deviant reports about secret prisons and domestic spying. At one point, Colbert offered this advice to the Beltway journalist in attendance.
Let's review the rules. Here's how it works. The president makes decisions. He's the decider. The press secretary announces those decisions, and you people of the press type those decisions down. Make, announce, type. Just put them through a spell check and go home. Get to know your family again. Make love to your wife. Write that novel you got kicking around in your head. You know, the one about the intrepid Washington reporter with the courage to stand up to the administration? You know, fiction.
The performance was initially ignored by journalists. A New York Times report on the event didn't even mention Colbert. But following wide exposure on C-SPAN and various websites, they began to take notice. The consensus was that Colbert was inappropriate. He was too tough on Bush, and he just wasn't funny. The Washington Post's Richard Cohen said Colbert was a failure as a comedian and rude. Others said he went too easy on journalists at the expense of the White House, but that was clearly untrue. More likely, what bothered journalists was Colbert's departure from the shared fantasy that prevails at these events, where everyone pretends the White House and the press are on different sides. It's understandable that Beltway journalists, stung by Colbert's barbs, would pan his performance. But why should anyone take them seriously when they pretend to deliver disinterested assessments of Colbert's comedic talents?
Now, speaking of the correspondence dinner, listen to this. Okay, so Stephen Colbert, great guy, funny guy, does what you're supposed to do at the correspondence dinner. You're supposed to take aim as a social critic, as a comedian. Guess what? The editor of the Washington Times, the paper, the propaganda rag run by Reverend Sun Myung-moon, sent him a threatening letter today and
really?
Said you better have one of your assistants start your car for a while.
Get out of here.
I'm not kidding. Now, Stephen did not tell me that. A coworker told me that. So I'm going to take the coworker at his word.
Right.
And that is classic right-wing Politburo nonsense. Truth hurts, Sun Myung-moon, editor. I don't know the editor's name, but that's illegal, what he did.
That's right.
That is absolutely illegal. And so my advice to Stephen's coworker was, you tell Stephen to read that on the air, and you also tell him to get litigious with this guy.
Yeah.
Because that guy deserves it.
Litigious on his ass.
Yeah. You better have an assistant start your car for a while. Classic Bush. Never has such a cadre of failures surrounded such failure. And it hurts them so much to hear the truth about this failure. You know what I mean? Because they've invested so much of their own failure in this failure. Like, if you ever saw the movie Shaun of the Dead, you know that movie, that British film Shaun of the Dead about the zombies? And there's the lead guy hangs out with his best friend who's like a bigger loser than he is. And then the other roommate says, the only reason you keep enabling him and keep him around is because he's a bigger failure than you and you can feel a little bit superior.
Right.
That is probably what a lot of the Bush fan club is all about as well. I'm not, you know, this guy is really incompetent, but we're going to keep supporting him, you know, in a very strange way.
It's like standing next to someone who's uglier.
But they, or it's just that they're so wrong about so much. And also Bush is such a movement figurehead for cruelty and small-mindedness and lack of imagination when it comes to a kind vision of the world. Does that make sense? So what they have is they have an unmitigated prick figurehead, right?
Right.
Then they have a guy that's policies are cruel, but you can pretend it's politics.
Right.
And they are exclusionary, but you can pretend it's politics. And you can get all your nasty, misanthropic, H.L. Mencken-ish, without the wit, rocks off there. So Bush means a lot to these people. So when Steve Colbert says the truth about him, but in comedy form, they can't abide it. And also, I think the same guy just wrote a book appraising George Bush that I saw at a Virgin Megastore today. One of those ones like, how a great leader did something. Yeah. George W. Bush, the man and his fights with terrorists, liberals, and John Kerry. Something like that.
I bet he was actually more offended than Bush. I mean, it's like one of those things,
right.
Like you insult the person, and like he's more,
right.
I mean, it's more about him than it is about Bush.
Well, it's to say, if you were to admit that Bush is the failure that he is, you must then you must look within.
Right, exactly.
And these Washington Times guys would rather be shot in the knee with a salt bullet. You know what I mean? That's why if it's true that he wrote that threatening letter to Stephen.
Right.
Which I'm sure he did. Because right. There's no reason for me not to believe that a Washington Times employee would do that. But if it is true that he did that, I really do hope someone gets litigious with that guy. To threaten Stephen Colbert after he does a comedy set, which is every year people do comedy at those things.
Right.
And say, you better have an intern start your car for a while.
It wasn't even like he could have even been harsher. I mean, he wasn't even as harsh as he could have been.
Oh, no, he treated him with kid gloves.
Yeah.
And also he was sandbagged a little bit. This is my opinion again, just watching it. What the Bush administration did, knowing that Steve Colbert is very sharp and very bright, let's have a comedian on before him doing the impression of Bush and keep him on too long.
Yeah.
So that they take all the air out of the room.
Right.
So that they could undercut whatever would come next.
Yeah, you can't follow the president doing something like that.
Right. So they did that deliberately, even though the respectful thing to do and actually the more traditional thing to do over the years is that the president goes on last.
Right.
But they knew Stephen was going to be good. And so they said, well, you know what? We're going to make it tough. And then the suck-up press corps and all the other wimps in the room groan at some of Stephen's accurate humor. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And those groaners only indicate what lame-os there. Like, when you would tell something that's true in the form of a joke, oh, you know what I mean? Like, this war criminal, oh, give the war criminal a break. And then you have the Washington Times guy, I'm going to write a letter threatening you, comedian, on behalf of this war criminal.
It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Who's this?
This is Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Chicago.
Oh, Chicago. How are things there?
Chicago is wonderful.
I'm so glad to hear it.
Yes.
We miss it a little bit.
We miss you.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Elizabeth, what do you do there?
I am a teacher, a high school teacher.
And what do you teach in this high school?
I teach English, American, and British Lit.
Really?
Yes.
And do your students thrive under your tutelage?
Oh, they thrive. I had one student say he's going to fail this year just so he can be with me again.
Uh-oh.
That's very sweet. Elizabeth, it's great to have you. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a writer for the Boston Globe, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hello, Charlie.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Next, say hello to a woman about town and the co-author of the Reliable Source column for the Washington Post, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hello, Roxanne.
Hello, Elizabeth.
And lastly, say hello to humorist and author Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you still making them read Billy Budd in high school English class?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, oh. Good.
I've never heard of it.
That's progress.
You've never met this Budd person. Well, Elizabeth, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle is now going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
All right. Here's your first quote.
We want to pay taxes. We want to pay taxes.
That was a chant heard earlier this week at a massive rally in Chicago.
Yes.
One of many held across the country. They were rallies to defend the rights of whom?
Illegal immigrants.
Exactly right. May 1st became the day without immigrants, as all over the country, shops were closed, taquerias rattled down their doors, as one protester's sign read, "No immigrants equals no burritos." Think about it, America.
It's a good point he has.
The immigrants went out, they protested, they said, as you heard, that they want to become citizens, they want to pay taxes, they want to do their civic duty to support this country, and the anti-immigrant forces said, what more proof do you need that they don't share our values? No, I'm just trying to wonder if the day without immigrants, when they all left their jobs, had an effect. I mean, did anti-immigrant...
I learned how to make my bed.
Yeah, well...
Well, you know, it was reported that around the country that couples were kneeling in front of their nannies and begging to sponsor their citizenship after having to take care of their own children for a day.
Did you see what was inside that diaper? Very good, Elizabeth. Now, for your next quote, it's actually a selection of quotes. They're all from a certain day 3 years ago. Here to start us off is Greta Van Susteren.
One observer here tonight said it was like the Beatles climbed out of that plane, and that's very much what it looked like from here.
Whoa, here's MSNBC's Chris Matthews.
He won the war. He was an effective commander. Everybody recognizes that, I believe, except a few critics.
Duck, everybody. Here comes G. Gordon Liddy.
You know, he's in his flight suit. He's striding across the deck, and he's wearing his parachute harness. And it makes the best of his manly characteristic. He has just won every woman's vote in the United States of America.
So those are just a few of the swooning reactions to a speech the president made on May 1st, 2003, a speech in which he declared what?
He declared that we'd won.
Good
enough. The fighting was over.
The famous phrase, of course, is mission accomplished.
Yes.
Yes. Every patriotic American, I'm sure, remembers where they were on the day we won the Iraq War. The president, of
and
course...
And with any luck, where their manly characteristic was. That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly. The president, of course, was on the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln in front of the banner which read, mission accomplished. That day has, to use a phrase, gone on to live in infamy. The latest defense of the president's premature celebration came from the First Lady, who said this week, and she did say this, that all the president meant was that the troops on that aircraft carrier had accomplished their mission. Which perfectly makes sense to me. Apparently, though, we must assume that the TV cameras were turned off for the president's second speech, which was titled, "The rest of you, of course, are screwed." All right.
Gordon Liddy's just nuts.
He really is.
I love him. He's just completely crackers.
All right, Elizabeth, here's your last quote.
Okay.
The president makes decisions. The press secretary announces those decisions, and you people of the press type those decisions down.
Now that was somebody who managed to annoy the president, the press secretary, and the people of the press at the White House Correspondents' Dinner last weekend. Who was it?
Was that Stephen Colbert?
It was Stephen Colbert. What happens when a comedian does a routine and nobody laughs? The conservatives and the press corps in attendance, for the most part, say that Colbert wasn't that funny. He made obvious jokes and was rude to the president. Now, Roxanne, you were there.
I know. Colbert was pretending to be a Republican and the president was pretending to be a Democrat. It was hard.
Really?
Well, I think there's a distinction between if he was actually funny, if Colbert was funny, and sometimes something that's great fun on television, particularly if you happen to agree with the person making fun of the other person they're making fun right. of, is funny on the screen. But in the room, he wasn't ha-ha funny. Whereas the president, who came out with, you know, a twin and sort of did this id thing, was actually very funny, and I wanted to give him credit for that.
All right, Carl, how did Elizabeth do in our quiz?
Elizabeth was prepared, Peter. Elizabeth, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message in your home answering machine.
Excellent.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
At last weekend's White House Correspondents' Dinner, the MC was Comedy Central's Stephen Colbert. A political satirist and a media satirist in one irony-dripping package, he should have been the ideal candidate for speaking truthiness to power-iness. But Colbert had a rough night.
I stand by this man because he stands for things. Not only for things, he stands on things. Things like aircraft carriers and rubble and recently flooded city squares. And that sends a strong message that no matter what happens to America, she will always rebound with the most powerfully staged photo ops in the world.
And I'm like, ouch, to a comedian, awkward tittering is a gruesome sound. But such is the price of flouting the rules. The White House Correspondents' Dinner, like the Gridiron Show and the Salute to Congress Gala, are opportunities for the press and Washington big shots to mingle together in a social setting, rubbing shoulders but never, ever to the point of chafing. And much of Colbert's material rubbed the subject raw.
The greatest thing about this man is he's steady. You know where he stands. He believes the same thing Wednesday that he believed on Monday, no matter what happened Tuesday.
I believe the government that governs best is the government that governs least. And by these standards, we have set up a fabulous government in Iraq. We know that polls are just a collection of statistics that reflect what people are thinking in reality. And reality has a well-known liberal bias.
The Washington Post gossip column grumbled that Colbert, quote, ignored the cardinal rule of Washington humor, make fun of yourself, not the other guy. Columnist Richard Cohen said Colbert was more than rude, he was a bully. And the First Lady, it was reported, refused to shake Colbert's hand. Well, can you blame her? The correspondence dinner is essentially a roast, the unwritten rules of which permit you to tweak the guest of honor without genuinely embarrassing or insulting him. What wife wants to squeeze a ball gown on just to witness her husband's public evisceration? So, yeah, the guest of honor got more than he bargained for, and so did the media hosts. Colbert was in his faux Bill O'Reilly mode when he said,
I have nothing but contempt for these people.
But he wasn't necessarily joking. Again and again he bashed the Washington Press Corps for 5 years of deference and docility, and again the crowd did not seem much amused.
But listen, let's review the rules. Here's how it works. The president makes decisions. He's the decider. The press secretary announces those decisions, and you people of the press type those decisions down. Make, announce, type. Just put them through a spell check and go home.
What is the sound of 2,700 people not applauding? From a timing and composure point of view, Colbert was clearly off his stride. How much of this was his material and how much the discomfort of the audience is impossible to measure. Either way, he was asking for discomfort by so indelicately going for blood. But the question shouldn't be, why was Stephen Colbert so rude? The question should be, why is the press gathering to toast a sitting politician in the first place, socializing with the government officials they're supposed to be covering? How can you sit there in your formal wear over Buff and Cabernet and maintain an arm's length distance from the person less than an arm's length away from you? The problem with the White House correspondence dinner on Saturday was not the master of ceremonies, it was the ceremony itself. Democracy requires a vigilant press. It doesn't much need the Friars Club.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks again to Stephen Colbert, without whom I would have gotten to bed a little bit earlier tonight, having not had to edit this show together. Find more of the Best of the Left podcast at bestoftheleftpodcast.com or contact me directly at hippiesympathizer@gmail.com. Have a good one, everybody.